So making disciples is the mission of the church. The church wasn't left with too much to do but to disciple the nations. What has happened over time is that we have created our own agendas. We have made many things that the master never commissioned us to do. We have brought those things and it has become what has defined much of our spending, our activity, rather than the core mission he gave us, which is to make disciples and to disciple the nations. That commission has a micro element, it has a macro element. The micro is the one-on-one discipling or discipling individuals. The macro is that God actually expects the church to disciple whole nations. Because it takes an individual to disciple an individual. It takes a nation to disciple a nation. And until the church begins to function like a nation, it can't disciple nations. We're not doing too badly in terms of there are exceptions, but I'm saying generally the church has been discipling individuals, but there has hardly been many examples where the church in a nation discipled that nation. But that is the macro dimension of the Great Commission. We're to make disciples, disciple individuals, but we're also to disciple nations. An individual cannot disciple a nation. It takes a nation to disciple a nation. The church is called a holy nation, but we are not functioning as a nation yet. When that begins to happen, whole nations will be discipled. Whole nations will be baptized, not in water, but they will be inundated in the mindset of the Godhead. They will be transformed on a whole scale level when the church functions as one, as a nation, that is impacting another nation within which it lives. So the harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Jesus said that in Matthew 9:37. The harvest is gathered as we make disciples of all nations, who make disciples, who make more disciples. The truth about it is that we will not be able to bridge the gap between the harvest that is waiting to be brought in without multiplying laborers. Laborers are not born. Laborers are made. And people don't become laborers by listening to sermons. People become laborers by being systematically fed, nurtured, developed, trained, equipped, and released. It's a process. We may call that discipling, and then maybe mentoring, coaching, but essentially it's a process of developing people. And as we multiply that, then the harvest is more, let me say, easier brought in. Let me say quality laborers also. Not just laborers, but quality laborers. There is no shortage of pastors. There is no shortage of church workers. There are churches that have 75 pastors on their pay list. There are mega churches that have up to 75 pastors. They have a pastor for hospitality, a pastor for the worship team, a pastor for ushering, a pastor in charge of children, a pastor in charge of youth, in charge of teens, a pastor in charge of the sanctuary, somebody who makes sure that things are well kept, a pastor in charge of maintenance, a pastor in charge of equipment, a pastor in charge of visitation, a pastor in charge of hospital ministries, a pastor in, up to 75 pastors. They even have a pastor in charge of the flowers within the campus. Yes. Yeah. And so there are some things if I start sharing about, we just concluded the last session by talking about resources, kingdom resources being realigned. If we understand how much money is being spent maintaining the church rather than pursuing the mission of the church, you'll be shocked. But like we have said, or like it has been prophesied, resources are going to be realigned.
Amen.
In Jesus' name. I was presenting a paper somewhere in Karen about 7 years ago at a meeting of leaders, a few pastors, some mission leaders, and I was asked to come and share on resource mobilization for missions and how to get the African church to become a sending force. And as I was sharing and just presenting out of the paper I had sent them, I mentioned that there are churches that spend up to 92% of all its resources on itself. And one pastor, a senior leader, He's a leader of a major denomination in Ethiopia, because that meeting had people from different countries. He got up and at the end of your presentation, you're allowed to take questions. So the man got up and said he doesn't agree with me, that the statistics I shared was wrong. Now, how can he say there's a church that spends 92% of his resources, that he doesn't believe that happens anywhere? I said, well, this is based on research. I am part of the Lausanne movement that does authentic research from all over the world on mission issues, evangelism, and so on. So anyway, I said, I got this from our network of people who are involved in this kind of work. And he says he disagrees. So it was later I found out the man comes from Ethiopia. He's a leader of a major denomination where they are spending up to 65% of all their income in sending out missionaries. So he said there can't be any church anywhere that does this. During lunch break, I sat on the same table with three Kenyan pastors. I had known one of them before. And then one other one who had been a missionary in the north and then came back and was now pastoring a branch of one of the big churches in Nairobi, which I will not mention. And we just got talking, and they started saying, actually, they are questioning my research findings also, that my figures are wrong, that it cannot be 92%. Because in the churches that they belong to, they spend as much as 98% on themselves. So that my 92% is not accurate. I need to raise that figure. That they don't know of any major church in Nairobi that spends 92% on itself and 8% outside. No. One of them said he sits in the committee that determines how church funds are used, and that 98 to 99% of the funds are used in paying pastors' salaries, church bills, maintenance, buying new vehicles, furnishing the nursery for the children, and so on and so forth. That if they manage to remember the Great Commission, they may release like 1% of the funds annually. So, but we're not talking about resource issues now, but it's a major, major... You see, I think it's Mike Stakura who said that there is a deficit in the advancement of the purposes of God because there is a lot of displaced Christians and a lot of misplaced Christians and misplaced Christian resources. That is why things are not advancing, because we veered up from the simple instruction to make disciples who multiply. That is how we are going to meet the deficit of workers needed for the harvest. How then do we engage this? We need to have a strategy, and that is to multiply disciples. So yesterday we began talking about disciple-making movements, and what we want to do in the next hour or so is to try to do what we normally do for 5 full days. At best, if we squeeze it, 3 days. Let me try and give it's not even an overview. I'll just take a slice out of this pizza, just a slice of it, and talk about it. In the DMM cycle, there are 8 cycles. There's prayer, there's access ministries, there is finding the person of peace, there's discovery Bible study, there is growing your group, there is multiplying groups, there's raising leaders, and then there's building teams, and then there's sending out whole new, starting the cycle all over. But I want to take just one, which is discovery Bible study. Before we do that, we talked yesterday about movement. This is how the early church grew. They went from addition to multiplication. They went even from multiplying disciples to multiplying churches. It became an unstoppable movement. The momentum was too wild that within 30 years, the testimony that was made of them was that these men have turned the world upside down. The greatest empire of its day could not recognize. They could not, they had to recognize that there is another force within it that they could not do anything about. They just kept multiplying. We don't have time today to examine the rabbit and elephant church difference. But you will see how we have majored, and we are doing a very good job at being elephants. Big, imposing, intimidating, but we're not growing. We're not multiplying. But the church was meant to be a multiplying, was meant to be an occupational force that multiplies rapidly, rapidly, so that everywhere is filled with the presence of Jesus. But just look at this diagram. If one person commits to make three disciples, let's say in a year, just invest your life, the totality of all your convictions, all that you know, pour into three people, and you equip them to go and repeat the process all over. This person, by the following year, has three others. This person, the same thing. And it just keeps on going like that. So we call this first generation, second generation, third generation. By the fourth generation, you not only have one disciple, but there are now multiple disciples that are being made over successive, because there is disciple making is a simple, replicable process. I didn't say easy. I said simple. It's so simple that anybody can do it. Anybody can do it who is a disciple. Imagine if by the fourth or fifth year, this process continues. One discipling three. And of course, I mean, if we are really serious about this, one person can disciple more than three people in a year. Is that correct? Because you know several people who don't know Jesus or who are born again but aren't disciples. They are not following him. Imagine if that process continues. It just continues. People keep on replicating, multiplying. You train people, you release them to go and raise others, to go and reach others with the gospel, and to disciple them. And that does not mean that the relationship cuts off here with this person. You continue to invest in these ones. It's a continuous process. It's a continuous process where we are making disciples who make disciples who make disciples. And you can't be a disciple who is not making disciples. Actually, there's no such a thing as a disciple who doesn't make. Anybody who is not making a disciple is questionable if you really are a disciple, because the main work of a disciple is to make disciples. Come, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. He didn't say, I will make you pastors. I will make you, you know. He didn't say, I will make you a church worker. I will make you somebody who fishes for men. So if I'm not fishing for men, I'm not following. Is that correct? Absolutely. Because you can't be following Jesus and he won't make you. And Jesus is not intentionally making you any other thing other than a fisher of men. So to claim to be a disciple without making disciples is a fallacy. It doesn't exist. What are the advantages of DMM? Number one, it's low cost. It costs very little. Very little. You don't spend money, because we de-emphasize buildings and structures and titles and appearances and big meetings that consume so much. Number two, it's so easy to start and reproduce. The reason is because it flows along relational lines. Relational lines. People within your natural social network. It's not about traveling to some distant land to go and look for somebody. You know, it's just simple. It's along relational lines. When Andrew encountered Jesus, the first person he thought about was his brother, Simon Peter. He didn't have to say, okay, Jesus, now set up a school so that you train us how to do ABC. No. He said, I've heard you. First thing, he ran to his brother Peter. He said, come. We have seen the Messiah, he who was prophesied to come. And you will see that all across the Gospels, and even in the book of Acts, you see that the Gospel flowed very freely along people's natural social networks. When Lydia encountered the Gospel in Acts 16, the first thing she did, she begged the apostles, you know, the apostle and the prophet, Paul and Silas, said, come to my house. If I have found favor, if I have found grace in your sight, come to my house. If you judge me to be a follower of God, come to my house. So instantly her house became a church, because they got there, people heard the gospel, they got saved, they were baptized. It became the first church in the whole of Europe. Paul had never labored in Europe until he went to that city. All his work was in Asia Minor. Remember the dream about the Macedonian call? He said, come and help us. That was when Paul redirected his journey there. And that encounter in the city of Philippi became the birthplace of the very first church on the continent of Europe, in a woman's house So it's so easy to start and to reproduce.